Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Good morning, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. It's good to be with you again. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins. I'm going to introduce everybody in just a minute, but I just want to explain Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association. That's what CCTA stands for. And I know we're new here on 107.1, and some of you may be tuning in for the first time, so I'll explain who we are and what we're about. CCTA is a 501c3 nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. We're a grassroots organization. We're constitutional conservatives. We advocate for liberty, less taxes, less government, more freedom. We're patriots.
And, adherence to the Constitution.
Adherence to the Constitution.
Freeing up the free enterprise system.
And free enterprise system. So that's who we are. That's where our focus is at. And the reason for the show is to help educate you, the public. Education is big with us here at CCTA. We do book studies on the Constitution. We especially like to study one called the 5,000-Year Leap. And our founding fathers were geniuses in their own right. When they put together the founding documents for this country, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and all the other documents, the Bill of Rights and everything, they were geniuses. And unfortunately, too many people don't know enough about those documents. So we spend time trying to educate on those and discuss those. We have watchdog groups. Hal James is our chairman of our watchdog committee. And Hal and his assistants, they go to the local county commissioner meetings, board of aldermen, school board. They like to attend. So they know what they're doing with our tax dollars, and they interject our opinions there to try to hold them accountable for the way they're handling our money.
We've been to the Board of Elections meetings, too.
That's Board of Elections also. Mm-hmm. We have Hal James is with us today. Rainer James, his wife, is chair of our
State Legislative Action Committee.
There you go. State Legislative Action Committee. It was just Legislative Action, but we've since then split that into state and federal. So Rainer is the State Legislative Action Committee chair. We have with us Nancy Murdoch. She's chair of our Education Committee. Nancy is the one that puts on the classes that we have periodically on doing different book studies on different topics, and she does a very good job at that. Mary Griswold is with us. Mary is our secretary, and she does a good job of keeping track of what we do. So
she's right-wing granny.
Right. She also runs a... There you go. You'll hear her commercial
later
on. One
of our sponsors as well.
Conservative blog that she has, rightwinggranny.com. And Mary, how many hits are you getting nowadays?
We're running between 15 and 20,000 a day.
So you know Mary's no amateur there. She's been doing this for a while and has gathered quite an audience together. Nancy is with us. She's on our National Security Committee. Glenn Fink. He's the one responsible for taking all the blame, as he is our chair.
Here, here.
So if we do anything wrong, I'll give you Glenn's phone number. We have Bob Griswold with us. He's our membership chairman. He helps us attract new members and to sign them up and collect their dues. So if you're interested in membership, we'll hook you up with Bob. Dues are only $12 a year, so you don't have to go to the bank or anything.
And we do take donations.
We do, as a 501c3. Don Murdoch is with us. He is our treasurer. We have another guest with us today, a new member of CCTA. That's Jeff Idolette.
And delighted to be here. Thank
you. Good to have you with us. Jeff's also a new member of CCTA. He's the publisher of Beaufort Times.
Well, we do have a Beaufort section, but we call our paper the County Compass.
The County Compass, and there's a Beaufort Times section in
it. He's also sponsors of this radio show.
He's also a sponsor of the show. So we've got rather large group here today, and looking forward to some interesting conversation. I'm going to kick it off here. This show is pre-recorded. It plays on Sunday, but we have to pre-record. So I like to touch on the current news topics that are going on. And today, the one that hit me first when I pulled it up was hundreds of fraudulent Cooper ballots discovered, challenged in Bladen County, North Carolina. And the Democrat Party-funded PAC involved in apparent massive voter fraud scheme.
No.
Who would have guessed?
So it goes on to say, a formal protest has been filed with the Bladen County Board of Elections to challenge several hundred apparently fraudulent absentee ballots cast for Roy Cooper and other Democrats in Bladen County. Initial evidence laid out in the protest suggests a massive scheme to run an absentee ballot mill involving hundreds of ballots perpetrated by and through the Bladen County Improvement Association PAC, a political action committee funded by the North Carolina Democrat Party and other prominent statewide Democrats. This protest was filed by the Bladen County Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor McRae Dallas and corroborated by a forensic handwriting expert. Shocking evidence resulting from a blatant scheme to try to impact the voting results of an entire county and perhaps even sway statewide and federal elections, including the gubernatorial race.
But I thought there wasn't any voter fraud. Isn't that what I mean?
Rick, what's the source of that information?
This one, it's not printed on
here.
I think it's
in Red State News. I think that's where I found it.
I think it's on several websites I saw. I don't know which particular site this. This was actually Governor McCrory's tweeted this out.
Oh.
And it linked to another site. Glenn?
Well, the other thing that's interesting that this doesn't seem to be a partisan issue because I believe the person that is filing the complaint is a Democrat.
God bless him.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Okay. According to Bladen County Board of Elections officials, a overwhelming number of suspicious write-in votes cast for Democrat Franklin Graham in the race for Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor appear to have overtly similar handwriting patterns on the ballots and witness signatures. In many cases, dozens of ballots appear to be filled out and witnessed by the same person. Without indicating that any voter assistance was provided, a clear example of voter fraud in violation of North Carolina election law. The county and state boards of elections are investigating. They have had them analyzed by handwriting experts who have verified that they were all written by the same people.
Thank heavens.
I have a question. Is there any way to prevent absentee ballot fraud? Because to me, that seems to be one of the areas that is most vulnerable. Is there any kind of, I don't know, accountability in absentee balloting that would prevent this sort of thing? Anybody know?
I don't know about that, but I know I have people that have asked me about absentee ballot and saying, oh, can I just send him in? I know what my dad would do, but he's not mentally competent. Oh. And I'm like, no, it's fraud.
There, I think early voting has a lot to do with it, too.
Yeah, theoretically there is accountability, but the Board of Elections, the people that have to sit down and go through them. Well, let's look at this gubernatorial thing in what county was it? Durham County?
Yeah.
90,000.
Yes. Yeah,
and
votes
in the last 2 hours
yeah.
that they extended the voting.
Now, how
time?
Long does it take to go through 90,000 written, you know, so.
Well, I know that when True the Vote in Houston a few years ago went through 25,000 new voter registrations and found 1,500 of them that were valid. The addresses were garages, vacant lots, things like that, and they just made up imaginary people and registered
right.
them to vote. So I know that voter fraud is a problem, but it seems like it would be more of a problem in an absentee ballot because you're mailing that in. You're not in person, you're not showing
right.
ID.
Absolutely. And you know, they've mastered the art of taking advantage of the
yes.
system. And everybody, I'm sure if you've got any common sense at all, everybody knows that voter fraud exists. The problem has been and proving it. Are people willing to prove it and prosecute it because of being accused of being racist or, you know, getting attacked just for trying to do that? Yes, Nan.
In the book Injustice by Christian Adams, he wrote about this place in Mississippi where someone knew when the absentee ballots would go out, and they would actually go through, this is a rural area, go to mailboxes and take them out.
Oh, great. That happened in Florida this election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't remember what state it was in, but they caught them on the security cameras stuffing stacks of ballots in the machines after the polls closed. Anyway, many of the witnesses who filled out and signed the fraudulent ballots in question have received financial disbursements from the Bladen County Improvement Association PAC for GOTV, which is Get Out the Vote, according to disclosure reports filed with the State Board of Elections. It is illegal to exchange money for votes or to pay someone to commit voter fraud in the state of North Carolina and under federal law. Dallas lists many striking examples in his protest, including one very active absentee ballot witness who personally validated at least 67 mail-in absentee ballots and appeared to have written in Franklin Graham at least 71 times. In further shocking evidence of this scheme, the Bladen County Improvement Association PAC filed reports with the North Carolina State Board of Elections admitting they paid these individuals multiple payments for Get Out the Vote operations. According to disclosure reports, among the largest contributors to the Bladen Improvement Association PAC are the North Carolina Democratic Party and candidates for statewide and countywide offices such as Mike Morgan, Wake County District Court Judge and Supreme Court Justice-elect, June Atkinson, Superintendent of Public Instruction, and Ken Spaulding, former gubernatorial candidate, Dan Blue III, State Senator and former candidate for State Treasurer, Chris Ray, Mayor of Spring Lake and former candidate for U.S. Senate G, Michael Cogdell-Bladen, County Commissioner. Now, the reason I read those out is because they're having such a fit now, accusing us of improprieties and you know, rigging the elections and all that stuff. And now they've been caught with their pants down.
However,
poetic justice.
It may be, and I'm giving them possibly more benefit of the doubt than they might deserve, but it may be that they thought they were supporting a worthwhile cause and did not know what the bottom line on the cause was.
Right. I understand that.
I always heard the road to hell was paved with good intentions.
But if you're writing in somebody else's name 71 times.
I realize that, but you the people that you named were people that just supported the organization. Am I correct?
Yeah.
But they may not have understood what the organization was about.
I think they understood very well. Don?
Having worked at the polls, you deal with provisional ballots, which are categorized right with the early voting. The one votes we're talking about here.
One stop is the same as absentee ballots?
Absentee
is that what
ballots,
you're saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they go in a little package that really isn't scrutinized unless they figure that it's going to make a difference in how the rest of the election went. One of the biggest things that we shouldn't forget happened in the 2012 election when thousands of military personnel's absentee ballots were not counted. They were just stuck over there in the corner, and then after the election was sewed up, they said, oh yeah, by the way, we do have these ballots, and they wouldn't have made a difference. So that's the thing about absentee ballots is, you know, even though they're there, they don't come into play unless it's close.
Right.
That was the 2000 election with George Bush and Al Gore. That's when they were waiting for the soldier vote to arrive. They had to do that just like we're doing now, I think, with McCrory.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about another kind of discrimination. In this article, I do know the source. It was Civitas. When people think of discrimination voting, they quickly go where the left wants them to go and think about young people, poor people, and minorities. But there is a more insidious type of discrimination, and in 2016, it likely impacted the election here in North Carolina. With statewide races, including the governor and state auditor, being decided by fewer than 5,000 votes, it is highly probable that over 70,000 voters who used the same-day registration method during one-stop voting decided these and some other 2016 elections. These 70,000 voters are receiving special treatment, while the other 4.6 million plus voters who voted this year followed the law governing registration and voting. Now, do you understand what special treatment they're receiving?
No, I'm not following what you're saying.
How do these SDR voters receive special treatment? The differences are when their votes are counted and how the state verifies that their registration is valid and complies with the law. The verification process for traditional voter registration involves mailing the new registrant a voting card that has information about offices the registrant can vote for and their polling place location on election day. If the card is not returned to the local board of elections by the post office as undeliverable within 15 days, the registration is verified. If the card is returned, the local board will mail it again. Both mailings are done via first-class mail. If the second mailing is not returned to the local board of elections, the registration is verified. If the mailing is returned a second time, however, the registration is denied and the voter is not placed on the voter rolls and can't vote and have their vote counted without taking other steps. In short, the local board of elections requires two mailings returned by the post office as undeliverable from the registrant's given address to deny the registration.
So that,
according
that process could take up to 30 days, right, if I listened correctly.
Correct. To verify the registration, it takes at least a 15-day waiting period after the first mailing is sent. If the mail is returned after 15 days, the registration is flagged in the second mailing and the verification process is initiated. The time to complete the process is why traditional voter registration cuts off so long before Election Day. Local boards of elections acquire this time to complete the process prior to Election Day. By contrast, let's compare the process to how a same-day registration voter is treated since the 2008 legislature adopted same-day registration for the 17-day one-stop voting period. Because the county canvass of votes takes place 14 days after the end of early voting, local boards do not have enough time to allow the 15-day window to see if the registrant's mailers are returned by the post office with a bad address.
So they could live in that garage or on that vacant lot that was spoken of earlier.
For those people utilizing same-day registration at or near the end of the early voting period, in this case, votes are counted first, even if a same-day registration registrant fails the initial verification mailing. Furthermore, the state canvass takes place 11 days after the county canvass, still well short of the 30-day window to complete the traditional two mail-in cycles. In other words, thousands of same-day registration voters could be counted, only for the local board to discover that the registrant had failed two verification mailers after the fact.
But that's too late.
Yep.
Yeah, it's too late.
Yeah.
Indeed, we have found from past studies that local boards of elections sometimes waited months after the end of same-day registration and early voting to start the verification process on same-day registration voters. These voters have their votes counted even if their registration is not valid.
Rick?
Yes.
I've got it. The discrimination is against people like all of us here. We are registered voters. We did it the right way. We gave our own addresses, yada, yada, yada. And yet, people playing that game can fraudulently counter our valid votes. We have the right to vote, the responsibility to vote, and they obviously are cheating.
Yep.
And don't. So, lawful voters are being discriminated against.
Right.
Not good. There are forms of discrimination, as in discriminating taste, that I applaud. I don't applaud that.
Well, one of the most natural questions that our viewers or listeners out there might have is, well, what can we do about it? Well,
hey.
In 2013, the North Carolina legislature fixed the same-day registration problem by eliminating same-day registration, along with requiring voter photo ID and other changes in the Voter Identification and Verification Act. Unfortunately, when the federal Fourth Circuit Court in Virginia struck down parts of the Voter Verification Act, including reinstituting same-day registration, they returned us to the problem of having votes counted in our election that are not cast by properly registered voters. So we fixed it, and one.
But the prognosis is we're going to get it back.
Hopefully.
Yes, now, and we need to.
Yes.
I also understand that I realize our voter identification law was struck down by a Virginia court. But yet, just prior to that, it was referenced as a good example of a law by a Texas court.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Right. So,
and Texas got it right.
Yeah, they did. Well, let's take a break here to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a moment to continue the conversation.
Bite Me Firearms, crazy name for an outstanding gun shop. Bite Me Firearms carries a variety of guns. They handle transfers, have one-day on-site concealed carry training, do AR customization, and will put their gun prices against anyone within 50 miles. Bite Me Firearms, Old Cherry Point Road, New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend features handmade Italian dishes, lasagna, spaghetti, fettuccine alfredo, stromboli, calzone, and many more. Panicelli's uses only the freshest ingredients, and they have fantastic New York-style pizza in four sizes or by the slice. Panicelli's Pizzeria also has great salads and subs. Panicelli's is easy to find. Just head to River Bend and Panicelli's will be at 40 Shoreline Drive. For authentic Italian food at an affordable price, head to Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. We're here in Fernwood Studios with a lovely crowd, and we're having a lively discussion on our electoral system. And did you know that the President and the Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people? Well, you should, because it's all over the news here lately by a group of people that want to take away the Electoral College and just go by the popular vote. But those offices are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. It is the Electoral College. So why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate, the one with the most votes, be the winner? Why did they create, and why do we continue to need this Electoral College? That's the question. The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority rural democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most people have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies never work.
It's mob.
They always implode.
Because it's mob rule. The rights of the minority are never protected. As a friend of mine says, it's two wolves and a sheep deciding what the lunch menu is to be.
That's exactly right.
How? Well, this raises its ugly head quite often. This is not anything new. Of course, it really hit the forefront in 2000 when we had the Hanging Chads down in mm-hmm. Florida. Because there is a big movement underway. Several different outfits have things going, trying to get the popular vote to overtake the Electoral College. And I read one article that said 70% of Americans are in favor of that. Of course, you know what you can do to statistics. It's who you ask the question to. Right.
And how you phrase that
question. And how you phrase that question. I'm sure if you ask most kids in school, high school or probably college, you would probably get a reply like that because they don't know diddly squat about diddly squat.
Because a large percentage of our population now doesn't know anything about our founding documents.
Exactly. Exactly.
I was going to add that there's a large large percentage of the population is all for a free handout, but they're not for who's going to pay for it.
I'd like to go back to the constitutional origins of the Electoral College. The reason that our founding fathers established the Electoral College was they were trying to balance the state and federal interests. In other words, they wanted to maintain the sovereignty of the states. The states were creating the federal government, not the other way around. And they were concerned about if the president were elected simply by a popular vote, then the smaller states would lose some of the leverage that they've got. Okay. And the same thing is true today. If you elected simply by popular vote, about six of the most populous states in the United States would govern who the next president would be each time.
That's right.
You know what? It's even worse than that. If you look at a map, county by county, for the popular vote, what happened was the cities, the large, large cities, went for Hillary. The rest of the country went for our president-elect.
I've seen that map with the cities marked in blue and the rest of the United States marked in red. And that's how it would turn out.
And the cities would control and overwhelm all the rest of the population.
I'd like to say one more thing about it. There were four of us fellows standing around talking about the election right after the election was over. And one of the fellows said, what we need to do is get rid of the Electoral College.
Huh.
Well, a couple of us pounced on him and didn't explain to him that wasn't what we really needed to do. But the point is that there's a lot of popular movement, as Nana has already mentioned, to try to do away with the Electoral College. And I think it is a socialist, one man, one vote sounds wonderful. Sounds like the right thing to do. But when you really analyze it and learn about it, you see what problems it would create for the United States.
Our checks and balances, as they were designed, were practically perfect. The notion that the senators represent the states, the House represents the people and is proportioned with respect to population. The Electoral College was intended to be an amalgam of both those things. Each state had the same number of electors as they had senators and representatives.
Right.
It was intended to balance more populous and less populous areas. Mm-hmm. And it does that. It's to give that up would give up our say in the government.
Yeah, a great example of that, the founders really wanted to protect those minorities in the less popular area. You think about the farmer. He's got like 100 cows and you got one farmer out there. Then you got everybody in the city saying, you will work for me and you will pay all the taxes of us big people who are going to say, forget it, you're going to kill us. It's absolutely absurd to think that the Electoral College would not help the minorities.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't anything new, guys, because over time, more than 700 constitutional amendments to change the Electoral College system have been proposed. But because the Electoral College has tracked with the popular vote, it's none of it succeeded. But
it has succeeded more than you think. 11 states are possessing 165 electoral votes, have enacted national popular vote into law. District of Columbia, Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Washington, Vermont, California, Rhode Island, and New York.
What do all those states have in common?
Where liberty goes to die.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, that thing is called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Uh-huh. The Constitution, if you look at Article 1, Section 10, says in part, no state shall, without the consent of Congress, enter into any agreement or compact with another state. Now, Congress hasn't approved that. It's not legal.
Well, I think what they think is going to happen from reading on their website is that when they get enough states on board, then they will put in a constitutional amendment.
270 electoral votes.
When they get to those that 270 electoral votes, then they will feel they can get an amendment to the Constitution to change that.
Well, we need to make sure people understand what's going on, because it is a way to usurp the power of the people and concentrate it in small areas. And we're stupid if we sit still for that.
Who's funding it? Who's behind that? Who is building the movement?
There's
Who's
a gathering? Lot of different people. This National Popular Vote, the guy's name is John Koza, and he's got all kinds of videos on YouTube. And they have some very good information, and I really did learn some stuff from watching that video that I did not know. And some of the things that we thought, and I was really, this is one of those things, you know, when you take up that critical thinking and you start looking at things, you realize there is another side to the picture. Some of the things that we think are actually not correct.
The way that the Electoral College is run right now is not a good way to run it. A perfect example being in the 1980s, 48 of the 50 states went winner take all on the electoral votes. Okay, we did all right in North Carolina because, you know, we were for the conservative side, and they got enough to win all of North Carolina's electoral votes. But if it's on the other shoe, that's like your vote not getting counted. You're in that 30-40% of people that didn't go with the flow of the state, and your vote is out the door, just like you never cast it. So how is that fair? Until the states can go back and split the electoral votes among the people that vote, 50-50 or 40-60 or whatever it comes out, then each vote will actually have merit.
Most of the states have a winner-take-all.
But that's 48
of the 50 have winner-take-all.
But that's a new thing. When we had our first election and we were voting for George Washington, only three states had winner-take-all. And by 1800, all those laws had been repealed. So when our founder started, they did not want a winner-take-all situation.
When they started, we also didn't have the party allegiance that we have now, and that is a problem.
The founders didn't foresee that either, Bob. They had factions.
Yeah, that goes back to what I wanted to make a point about. There's so many people out there I meet that they don't have a clue who an elector or what it is, or how they come. And when I read this article from the New American, just quickly, it says, the persons chosen to serve as an elector candidates for their party are typically hardcore party activists, former public office holders. They're usually tapped at a party conventions to honor them for their years of service in party activities. Well, that leaves nonpartisans out.
Well, it wasn't true in our case. We had an ordinary person that we all knew. I can't think of her name right. Karen Kozel.
But they're not.
Karen Kozel was that person.
Right, but the point of the article was really to state your electors are not just some random people selected off the street. They're people that are, you choose.
Well, the Constitution says they can't be employees of the United States. In other words, they can't be federal judges. They can't be an elected official in the government. They can't be even a federal employee. So they take care of some of that problem.
It certainly can't be some of those people out in Portland that are protesting that didn't even vote.
Yeah.
They're not even registered to vote.
Another thing I hope all of our listeners understand is it's the total number of representatives that you have in Congress that gives you the number of electoral votes that that state has. In other words, I was thinking about North Carolina. I said, how many has North Carolina got? And I looked on this chart and it says 15. I said, oh, well, that's right. We got two senators and we got 13 congressional districts. I knew that. You know, I'm in district number 3. And there are 13 of them. So I don't think everybody fully understands that in this conversation, the people that are listening.
Right.
But the thing is that I learned something today that I thought was really interesting when I was studying this, is that because of the way politics have gone, some states get absolutely no attention from candidates. For example, Utah has not voted for a Democrat since 1964. So consequently, when the presidential candidates are running, they don't go to Utah, neither party. Same thing in Minnesota. They haven't gone to a Republican since 1972. So they don't go campaigning in Minnesota. So what happens is that most of the campaigning is done in what they call the swing states. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed when I looked at the statistics on this, that because I really believed that the cities would control the vote. Actually, that really wasn't the case. They took Ohio and they showed the different percentage of in the big cities, the medium cities, and the small cities, and how many times the candidates had visited those particular areas, and it was actually pretty even. And the vote was pretty even as well. I really thought that it would be swayed in a different direction, but it really wasn't the case.
But they said that was one of the myths of it, saying that if we went to a straight popular vote, that all the big cities would be the ones that elected the official.
Uh-huh. It surely looked like it on the map.
Yeah, but it's not true. They've already said that the size of the ruraler and the smaller cities equate to the same number of voters, so that you're still evened out. But I was under the impression that you turn it over to the popular vote, that New York, Los Angeles, and all these cities would carry it away. But they proved it statistically, including all the stops for the campaign sites through these battleground states. And it literally come out awash. It really did.
When? This past election?
Yeah, this past
election. Well, this past election was unique.
No. This was based on the 2012 election. Because haven't been time to do this kind of statistics on this election.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
One of the other idiosyncrasies that I've heard about is you take a dark blue or a dark red state, and you will find that the minority doesn't come out to vote because they know their vote won't count in that election. Now, I'm stating what somebody else, I don't remember the source, but you would find that the minority doesn't come out. If it was the popular vote, supposedly they would come out to support their candidate.
Well, I heard another analogy today on it. If the popular vote's the way to go, why do we have a Senate?
Here, here. It's the same
mm-hmm.
thing.
You know, same
it's,
thing.
Right. Well, the 17th Amendment took care of that because dear friend of mine, Woodrow Wilson, I could dig him up and kill him again. just absolutely the worst president that we've ever had as far as I'm concerned. But that was some real shenanigans happened in 1913 when they pulled that one off. And it has affected our republic in a most unsatisfactory way. It's a bad thing altogether.
And it's my contention that losing the Electoral College system and the balances that come with that would be every bit as bad as the 17th Amendment was.
Exactly.
I agree with you, Nan. Yeah. I think the 17th Amendment did take away some of the power of the states, but not entirely, because you still got two senators from each state, so each state is equally represented in the Senate. So the Senate, it works as a balance between the Senate and the House. That's the way it's supposed to be.
The disruption came about because now they don't report to the state legislatures.
They don't.
Now they're answerable directly
to the
people.
And originally the state legislature could recall them if they weren't
exactly.
happy with them.
Exactly. And so they were careful to represent the position of the state.
Yeah.
Well, I think it opened the door to a lot more corruption, a lot more money being spent to get elected, because there is so much money to be made from the lobbyists. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just face it, to cut to the chase. You go to Washington and you're worth X, you stay up there for a few, you're like 10 times X. So it's expensive to live in Washington, so there must be something going on there a little
it's
bit.
The cooling.
There was a joke going around a while back. Somebody posted something on Facebook that they wished that the congressmen would wear patches on their jackets saying who sponsored them, like the race car drivers.
I remember that.
I don't think their jackets are big enough, actually.
Well, that's probably quite possible.
We'd know if they were for them.
Well, you know, this conversation, it's an important one to have, but what's disheartening is so much of our youth now have no idea what it's all about. they're not being taught in school anymore. Mm-hmm. And last night we had our monthly meeting and we talked a little bit about education. House Bill 588 that was passed back in 2008, I believe it was, which is the Founding Principles Act, requiring them to teach in the high schools here in North Carolina about the founding documents, about the founding fathers, about the birth of our nation. And that's not being enforced here. And probably most of the other states don't even have a bill addressing it. So unless we can get our youth educated and brought up to speed on it, what's going to happen in the next few election cycles?
I want to get back for just a minute about the Electoral College. I'll tell you why. I was talking with Lockwood on the phone this afternoon. We had a nice conversation about it. And he said, you know, the state of North Carolina ought to consider something similarly, where that you have the governor elected by the two senators and the representatives, number of representatives in a particular area, and the number of senators, which would be is two now, would combine and to vote on who the governor will be. He said, because you take the largest cities in North Carolina and the largest counties in North Carolina, you can take about six of them that'll dictate to the other 94 who's going to be the next governor. So I thought that was an interesting thing. If you could figure out some way to allocate the voter representation between how many representatives you got in the House and how many senators you've got, and combine the two, so each area would have the combination of two, such as now it's how many representatives you have in the U.S. Senate, how many representatives you have in the U.S. Congress, in the House. So the total of the two. If we could get some combination like that working in the state, maybe it would be an amendment to the North Carolina Constitution.
Well, then the federal government would come down and tell us we couldn't do that.
Well, then we might stand for our state sovereignty again.
Well, wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be novel, yes.
It would be refreshing.
I thought it was an interesting concept for us to think about something.
It is a thought to ponder. So while we do that, let us take a break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. We're having a lively discussion on the Electoral College, and we have a lot of information here. Jeff, you had a question.
Yes, I believe a huge percentage of the electorate is real fuzzy on where the electors go to cast their votes in the Electoral College.
Yes, well, they will go in North Carolina to Raleigh on December the 19th at the Capitol. Elaine Marshall, the Secretary of State, will call them to order, and then they will cast their votes. Now, in North Carolina, there is a penalty, because there's been discussion of this, that there have been attempts trying to change
there's
some
electors.
There's
a move on trying to get electors to change their vote.
In North Carolina, if that should happen, that they did that and did not vote the way they were supposed to, they would be removed and they would be fined $500. In some states, it's a little bit more expensive than that. Maybe we should raise the
but, I think $500 is a slap on the hand. We'll make it about $5,000.
Okay, so they're removed and they're fine, but did the vote? Yeah, what happened to their vote? Does it count, or you know, how is that resolved?
Well, the thing is, that's only one vote, and in North Carolina, it's a winner take all. So the one vote would just be sort of negated, I believe, right?
Sounds like it, but I don't really know.
And one thing I'd like to add is the Constitution, the 12th Amendment to the Constitution says that those lists will be signed and certified in each state and transmitted, sealed to the seat of the government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted.
Another thing that, Jeff, I think that people don't know is that how people become electors.
Right.
It's like, well, who are these people? Where did they come from? What do they do? Yeah. Well, if you live in this area and you're in District 3, then Karen Cosell was elected at the district convention of the Republican Party to be the elector. So that's how she got that job. The reason it was the Republican is because our representative is Walter Jones, a Republican. Now, if you live in a district that has a Democrat representing them, there are a few in North Carolina, then I'm sure that their elector is a Democrat. Mm-hmm.
But they're supposed to vote the way the election went.
Exactly.
Not their party.
Right.
They're not required by the Constitution to vote that way. That's just been tradition over the last number of years.
Well, they are supposed to vote the way the law is in their state. And like you said, 48 states, it's winner take all. Maine and Nebraska have a different way of doing it.
Right.
Congressional district and how it went, I think.
But the Constitution left it up to the states.
Yes, it is a state thing. And the thing is that if you have a national vote, national popular vote, it is another way of lessening the power of the individual state.
Hear, hear.
So I don't think it's a good thing.
You know what? I heard Newt Gingrich on television this week say, to do with states' rights, oh, the Civil War settled all that.
Oh, boy.
Well, by George, it did not. That man is smart, but he is usually right, but he couldn't be more wrong on that one. Actually, Jefferson Davis, after the Civil War, tried and tried and tried to get a trial. He thought he could win it. The Yankees did, too. He never got the trial. States' rights still exist.
Well, Newt Gingrich, believe it or not, is one of the people that supports this popular vote thing.
The question would be, during this past election cycle, North Carolina saw Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton. If we had just a straight popular vote, would any of those people have come here?
Interesting question.
That's right. Well,
that's because we're such a big state. State has the second most electoral votes? The second most. Everybody knows California has the most.
New York. Not Alaska.
Texas.
It is Texas.
Yeah.
That kind of surprised
me. Well,
you
know what? They never went to Texas.
Okay. Well, we've had a lot of conversation about this topic. Let's do a little survey here. I'm going to go around a circle. Electoral college, good thing or bad thing?
Good thing.
It's a good thing, but I believe that it needs some work in North Carolina.
Good thing.
Very good thing.
It's a good thing.
Good thing, but we need to educate the people on its purpose.
Amen.
Absolutely. Good thing.
It would be better if they went away from winner-take-all in the states and proportionalized the electoral votes by the percentage of the people that went one party to the percentage of the people went the other. That way, each individual's vote would count for something.
Definitely a good thing, and I've learned a lot from this group about the entire subject.
Okay, and I'll make it unanimous. It's a good thing. So you've heard 10 conservatives express their opinion.
But one thing I would like to say to kind of talk about how the process seems to work, the progressive, liberal, I'll say socialist-leaning people are into the long game, are very patient. they start out mm-hmm. by just trying to move the needle to a new normal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you heard once, you've heard thousands of times that we're a democracy.
And we are
and
not.
And we all know that we're not. We're a republic, and this is what this is about. But if you listen to many people, people that you believe are conservative, or they may act like they are, and others, they will still talk about a democracy.
Glenn,
and
we got a lot of work.
That is incremental change.
We got a lot to work to do to push
it
back. We need to be just
as move
patient.
This in that direction if that's they so choose.
And that's why education is so important. Our youth need to understand the difference between democracy and a republic. They need to be taught. And parents, you need to start teaching them. And if you don't know yourself, you need to find out. And there's plenty of resources. Go to cctaxpayers.com. You can get in contact with us there on our feedback button or on our contact button. And get signed up. I think Nan's planning to start a new class on the 5,000-year leap, which will take you through all of our 28 principles of liberty and what the founding fathers used to create our founding documents. Bob?
I wanted to add something about an earlier discussion that we had in the along with the democracy versus a republic. In the earlier discussion when we talked about same-day registration, one of the efforts that we're very much so aware of is Alinsky's rules, that their intention is to overwhelm the system totally and just crush the system by its own weight.
That's right. And look, guys, if you... look around your grocery stores and around your area, you'll find a place where you can pick up the county compass. And Nancy, every week has a section in there with
most
one
weeks.
Of the 28 principles of liberty. It's called the Liberty Bell. And that's in the county compass weekly. And you can start learning about those principles
it's
by reading
it. It's online at the Beaufort Observer.
That's right. Also, the Beaufort Observer website, you'll find it online.
You know, I like the articles with right-wing Granny because sometimes I learn from the County Compass what it has to say, and I put the CCTA thing, and then I see how it's working when I read what right-wing Granny's doing or not working.
Right. I'd like to clear up one thing, though. The County Compass is balanced. You can find articles in there that are very conservative. You can find articles in there that are written by pretty liberal people. So the County Compass newspaper itself is a balanced newspaper. But it does give...
You mean they exercise real journalism?
Exactly.
For
well, that's refreshing.
For a number of counties.
Yes.
Well,
counties. Look, you know how I know that it's a good publication? Look at the advertisers that are in there.
Oh, yeah.
They would not be advertising as many as there are in there if somebody wasn't putting something interesting in there, okay? Because it's a free newspaper. They're not making money off of subscriptions. It's all off of advertising.
There's what I would call a little country store, Manette's Grocery here, that I deliver county compasses to, not far from our home. And I walked in there with the last batch of them, and there's about six or seven people in there, and they all said, "Oh, here's the paper," and wanted one. It was really pleasant to just stand there and hand them out to the customers themselves.
I think it speaks well of the movement, since there's so many people that are upset. I'll just be brief about media. We already know how it's just completely biased and corrupt. We get that. And so there is a resurgence, a renewal, back to what we call more citizen journalism, which is what the papers are supposed to have. And I think the County Compass is really a good example of it. And there's other people using the newer medias to do that. So I'm looking forward to this new citizen journalist movement that we're having.
It's healthy.
It's very
I just
healthy.
Want to note that recently the New York Times came out and apologized for their reporting on this election cycle. And they said in the future they were going to go back to being fair and balanced. Now, I read the New York Times.
I'm not holding my breath, are you?
And I don't remember it being fair and balanced, but you never know what could happen.
When is the future? Because they haven't changed their ways.
Tomorrow is never today.
Right. Okay, I'm going to change subject real quick, and let's talk about some of the
education.
Cabinet appointees that are being discussed. There's one I'm really, really thrilled about. And that's the education, Secretary
Johnson.
Of Education. Nope.
No, that's statewide. You're talking about national now?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't heard it.
thought it was going to do away with the Department of Education.
Arne. Is it Arne?
Hillsdale College.
Hillsdale College.
Whoa. Now they're talking about that. Has it been announced?
Well, it's been talked about all over radio. Just think about that now.
Well, you know, if Larry Arne sticks to his principles the way he should, he would say no thank you.
Because abolish he is the department?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, he could get in there to help disassemble.
Right. Well, what I'm saying...
What a concept.
I don't think that it's going to be an overnight thing to abolish it. You know, you got a lot of other things going on, too, and you've got to work with Congress on it. You know, it's not just... We don't want him to write an executive order to do it.
Oh, no.
We want it done the right way.
You know what, Rick? Thinking about it, if Larry Arne did get in there and their notion was to work toward its abolition and getting rid of it, you wouldn't be facing a bureaucracy that was fighting what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. It might really work.
The reason I mentioned it is because a lot of people may not know who Larry Arne is or be familiar with Hillsdale.
But isn't Trump noted for saying the famous words, "You're fired"? It's his bureaucracies. If he wants to fire them, I believe he can.
Well, Nan, can you tell us a little bit about Larry Arne and Hillsdale College and the principles that they espouse?
Hillsdale College, I can't remember exactly when they were founded, but it was before the Civil War. And let's just say it doesn't appear that they've ever been very close to government.
How much government money do they take?
They take no government money.
Not the only college, but they're one
they
of the
They do not even take the GI Bill.
That's right.
That's right.
They will make arrangements for military.
Free college for the military.
For different funding, but they will not accept the government money that goes with their...
And if you graduate from there, you will know the Constitution.
Everybody has to study the Constitution at Hillsdale. But the thing about the reason they don't take any money from the government is they don't want to play the game. They don't want to have to abide by all the rules and jump through all the hoops that entails. So it's a two-sided sword, and they wield it very well. They have always done what they thought was right. They had black students in their schools way before anybody else did. They have a very stringent admission policy, and they seem to really stick by their guns.
All right. So if he is the one, and it's not abolished immediately, it'll be a step in the right direction. I think everybody will agree that CCTA is proud to have a Hillsdale Scholarship Fund.
You can send us money.
That's right. On cctaxpayers.com, there is a donate button. And if you wish to donate the Hillsdale College Scholarship Fund through CCTA, we would definitely appreciate that.
I wanted to add that Hillsdale College at hillsdale.edu also offers free college courses, including Constitution 101.
Constitution 101. I signed up for that a long time ago.
And contributions are tax deductible.
Yes. They are at that. Well, folks, we've spent a long time talking here, and we've run out of time, so we're going to wrap this up. And I want to thank each and every one of you for being here, and thank all of our listeners for being here. And hope you'll turn back in next Sunday at 11 o'clock for CCTA Wake Up Call.
Hi, if you're listening and you're interested in this show and have questions or concerns about immigration or national security issues, please go ahead and use the contact button on the website and send those questions and give your concerns to us for us to address maybe on our radio show. You can do that at cctaxpayers.com.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.